violinist Sarah Chang and the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra with Summer from Vivaldi's Four Seasons.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, playing beautiful classical music just for you. If you have a business or organization that you would like to partner with WHFR on in getting the word out about what you do, well, we would love to talk to you. We call that concept underwriting or sponsorship, and WHFR, although a non-commercial radio station, is always open to partnering in sponsorship or underwriting with your great local business or organization. If you'd like to talk more about this very cost-effective way of getting information out about your business and letting the community know that you support WHFR, and believe me, our loyal listeners are just that, very loyal, we'd love to talk to you. Give me a call, Susan McGraw, WHFR General Manager, 313-845-9842. That's 313-845-9842. Love to talk about underwriting.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. We're bringing you non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. As a rule, mainstream reporters like to editorialize UFO sighting reports with the giggle factor. And often it's an attempt to make themselves appear smarter than the UFO witness. And often it's due to pressures from their editor or can even be attributed to government intervention. And so I admire the journalists who can report UFO-related events honestly and soberly without prejudice, despite their own personal beliefs or pressures from above. Angela Joyner is one of those journalists. Ms. Joyner broke the Stephenville, Texas UFO story back in February of 2008, and it soon was echoed around the world. And she's been interviewed on several radio and TV shows, to include CNN's Larry King Live, and is now a special correspondent on the Jerry Pippin Show. And we are fortunate to have her with us on We Are Not Alone today. And welcome to the show, Angela.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's our pleasure. Believe me, I want to get this Stephenville story, like I was telling you before that we were on the show here, get the scoop on it while it's still hot and fresh in people's minds.
Right.
So how does it feel knowing that your little hometown has become a UFO hotspot?
Well, normally our town is known for world champion cowboys and state football champions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of horse people in our area and a lot of dairies. So it's definitely a switch. It's been quite an event for a town of 16,000.
All right, 16,000 people in Stephenville.
Right. We do have Tarleton State University, which is a branch of A&M. So every semester our population grows by about 9,000. They come and they go.
Oh, they come and they go, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So for those of our listeners who are not familiar with it, can you relate the events chronologically of back in February?
Sure. Well, actually, it wasn't February. It was January. The first sighting was reported to me was January the 8th, and that sighting came from a pilot named Steve Allen, and he called on the afternoon of January the 9th, and like most witnesses I've learned, he sort of prefaced his comments with, "Look, I'm going to tell you something. I don't know if you wanted to write about it or not, and, you know, I don't want you to think I'm crazy or anything like that." And I was like, "Okay, well, let's hear it," you know. And he went on to tell me about this incredible sighting. And it was something that he said was a mile long and a half mile wide. And when it left the area, it took off at a speed of about 3,000 miles per hour, he thought. That was his estimate. And before it did that, it had, it first started out as a horizontal configuration of lights, and those changed into two vertical configurations. Hmm. And then it took off, and they were in a little town called Selden. Selden is about 12 miles south of Stephenville.
Mm-hmm.
And has about probably 25 people that live there. It's just a really small community. Mm-hmm. And he was at a friend's property, and actually he had three friends with him. Mm-hmm. So there were people to back up his story. I called those people also. And since he was a pilot, and I learned that he kept his plane in his Cessna in Stephenville at Clark Field, I called the manager there, and his name's Todd Downs. And I said, "Look, Todd, I understand Steve Allen keeps his plane there." "Yeah," he said. I said, "Well, how long have you known him?" He said, "Oh, probably more than a year or so." And I said, "Well, what kind of guy is he?" And he said, "Well, he's a pretty good guy." "Why?" I said, "Because he saw something incredible last night." And Todd goes, "Yeah, I know. He's already called us this morning. We've been trying to help him figure out what it is."
Hmm.
And at that point, I thought, well, you know, here's something that will interest the readers in our community, because they know these people.
Right.
And so I decided to pitch it to the publisher of the newspaper and the editor. Editor was on her way out the door. She was leaving early that day, so I mostly worked with the publisher that day.
This was the Empire Tribune in Stephenville?
That's the only newspaper in town, the Stephenville Empire Tribune.
Okay.
And the editor, she had some things to do with her children, and she wasn't really interested, and the publisher just thought it was a great story.
Hmm.
And from that point, after I wrote the story, I don't know if you're familiar with how newspapers work, but the paginator lays out the pages of the paper.
Okay.
And at that point, you know, you see how much room you have, and you see what the headline could be, you know, as far as room. You got to figure out the words that'll fit there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you decide, okay, what's going to sell the paper? What's going to go above the fold of the newspaper, and what's going to go below the fold on the front page?
Right.
And I was expected to do two front page stories every day, as well as take care of some weekend pages on the Sunday edition.
Mm.
And it is a daily paper, except for Saturdays. So I wanted UFO in the headline, and the sports editor was there, and some other people. We were all tossing it around. The publisher wanted UFO in the headline also, but some of the other employees were going, "Well, it's really dangerous to put UFO in a headline. You know, you can't They didn't think we should do it.
Right.
But in the end, at a newspaper, you know, the publisher is the big boss, so
right.
She said, let's go for it, and they did a little subheading with it. And once that hit the racks on January the 10th, people started calling in and said, look, I saw something too.
Mm-hmm.
We also included Steve Allen's work phone number. He is a business owner in a town called Glen Rose, which is not very far either.
Mm.
And so he wanted his work number included because he knew that this thing was so large and just overwhelming that they couldn't have been the only people to have seen it.
Well, how far away was this object from Mr. Allen?
It wasn't very far, and because you know, I can't. I don't really remember how far it was.
Well, how could he judge? How could he judge the distance? I mean, the size of the thing, unless it was very close. You know what I'm saying?
Well, pilots are a little bit better, I think.
Was he on the ground?
Judging distances and airspeed and things like that than the average person. That's another reason I wanted to do the story.
He wasn't he wasn't in the air at the time. He was on the ground, right?
No. They were doing some work. They were clearing some brush and doing some work on this friend's place.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Mike Odom.
Mm-hmm.
And just happened to be outside at the right time. Not only did it, you know, take off, about 10 minutes later, it came over them again with two F-16s in pursuit.
Okay.
Or it looked like they were in pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
And, the first time it came over, they were all scratching their heads going, God, what could that have been? Well, then the second time it came over, they were just really taken aback.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, the start of just a whirlwind UFO sighting for our area, and people started calling Steve because his phone number was in there.
Mm-hmm.
They also started calling me. I usually went to work then about 9 every day, and I probably had already talked to Steve by 11 o'clock. I probably had already talked to him maybe 3 times, and we were saying, okay, this is who called, and this is what they saw, and kind of comparing notes there.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did then is in the afternoon, I started kind of going over my notes of the different people that had called in, and I chose 4 more to interview and write about for the next day.
Okay.
And one of those was a county constable, an elected official. And he was willing to go on the record. He had been outside. He lives in Dublin.
Who is this?
That's not very far.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been outside with his 8-year-old son.
Mm.
And just amazed at what he saw. He even ran to his truck to get some binoculars. And when it started moving, it was moving so fast he had trouble keeping up with it in the binoculars.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the constable, because he's an elected official and because they don't go on the record many times.
Right.
And, you know, we've seen from just past experience, I suppose, of what sometimes happens to people that do go on the record when they're elected.
Yeah, that's right.
Then
again, there was the governor of Arizona who went on the record of poo-pooing the Phoenix Lights. And
go so far as to put a administrative person in a suit.
Yeah, in an alien suit. And then he didn't get elected because he made fun of the thousands of people who saw that. And then he comes back 10 years later and says, you know what? Now that I'm no longer the governor, I saw it too.
Right.
He saw it
too. I know. Isn't that incredible? And I'm in contact with Dr. Lynn Kitai.
Right.
And, you know, she did the book and the new documentary.
Yeah, she was on our show.
Huh?
She was on our show a while back here.
Yeah.
Back to Kai Kai.
And, you know, she knows. I mean, she's an incredible lady, and she did so much work and is still doing so much work on that. And, she's a neat lady. But what I was gonna say, I think the constable going on the record got a lot of attention, a lot of media attention.
All right.
Because it wasn't very long before Associated Press picked up the story. Mm. And as soon as Angela Brown with Associated Press wrote her story, I was told by a local TV news reporter from WFAA, Jim Douglas, that it went around the world in less than 14 hours.
Wow.
So
let's go back to these.
Incredible.
Let's go back to these F-16s. You say that the F-16s were seen chasing this thing. Now, UFO Hunters, History Channel's UFO Hunters was there and investigated. And they found that the air base is, you know, not too far from Stephenville, and yet they're not allowed off the base unless it's an emergency. Is that correct?
The Naval Air Base is in Fort Worth. Now, Stephenville is about 70 miles southwest of Fort Worth. Now, the people here are used to jets coming over Stephenville. They're traveling to Brownwood, to the military operating area.
Okay.
And we all know what those jets sound like.
Right.
And the other thing is, with this sighting, it was totally silent.
Mm-hmm.
And about 2 weeks after they said they didn't have anything in our area, they put out a press release only to radio stations, not to TV stations or print media, and said, oh, well, we made a mistake. And it was Carl Lewis, Major Carl Lewis, that I had spoken with just like the next day, I believe, after Steve Allen had told me, you know, what he had seen.
Right.
So I called Dias in Abilene. I called Fort Hood, just these different places that I thought that the F-16s could have been coming from.
Right.
Now, you know, he told me he was a real friendly guy. He said, no, I don't think it was us, but I will check it out for you and find out if we had anybody in the area. And he speculated on what he thought it was. And he thought it was two airliners that somehow the sun had reflected off of them, because it was during sunset and kind of caused a light illusion of some type. And, of course, I put that in the story. And then 2 weeks later, when he does his press release, he doesn't call me. He has my email, my phone number, everything.
Mm-hmm.
I hear about it only because a person from KRLD radio station called and said, hey, what do you think? We want to get your take on the military backtracking on their statement. I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Let me get back with you. So I start trying to get a hold of Major Lewis, and after several tries, I finally got him. And his demeanor had totally, totally changed. He was not the same friendly guy. Anything that I asked him, he would just say, Miss Joyner, I'm sorry, all I can say is, and he would read. So I'm like, you know, how do you lose 10 F-16s for 2 weeks? I don't understand.
You know,
and he would say, Miss Joyner, I'm sorry, all I can say is. And he did not vary from that statement.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really couldn't find out anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the press release said there was an internal error in communication in what he had told me before.
Well,
saying at that time.
They've got to know if they send up F-16 jets.
Can you imagine how many people on the ground it takes get 10 F-16s in the air.
You've got to give permission to send them up to begin with. Who gives permission?
You know? I mean, that would be a major...
And that would be a scramble. So why are we scrambling F-16s? Are we going out for a joyride or what? You know, gas is cheap, for goodness sakes, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, isn't it?
Let's just blow the taxpayers' money on gas and go for a joyride. And then don't put it down on the books and nobody knows. See, none of this makes any sense when it comes to the military's and the skeptics' explanations. Don't get me started on that.
Well, you know, I'm new to this. I did not have any experience with this. Before I was passive about UFOs, if I read something, I would think, well, that's interesting. I might watch something on TV or I might turn the channel.
Right.
But, and so at the time, I really didn't know what was going on, but I knew, you know, that... 10 F-16s misplaced for 2 weeks. That's got to be strange.
Well,
I even knew how much people believed in the conspiracies and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, common sense tells you that doesn't happen.
Right. I'm going to have to take a break, so hold that thought. I need to remind our listeners that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with the journalist Angela Joyner from Stephenville, Texas, and we're going to be right back with her right after this non-commercial break, so please stick around.
I want to change some things. I want the moms where I live to have childcare they can trust.
I want to make sure my little brother and his friends have a safe place to play.
I want to help more kids graduate from high school.
Help more hardworking families learn how to budget and save.
I want more of my neighbors to have access to health care.
Want to make a difference? There are so many ways you can. Help create opportunities for everyone in your community.
I want to change what I see around here.
United Way is creating real, lasting change where you live by focusing on the building blocks of a better life: education, income, and health.
I mean, I just want to see more smiles on my sidewalks.
Reach out a hand to one and influence the condition of all. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. For more, visit United Way at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
If you want to change the world, then you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford Community College. Henry Ford Community College offers dozens of degree and certificate programs, plus the opportunity to network with your peers and potential employers. Taking classes at Henry Ford Community College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford Community College. For more information on admittance and financial aid and class schedules, call the Henry Ford Community College toll-free number at 1-800-585-HFCC. Again, that's 1-800-585-HFCC.
Radio fans, Imagination Works has been revamped. Are you familiar with radio drama? If not, become acquainted with old-time radio mysteries on WHFR, Late Night Monday, 11 p.m. until midnight. Hear The Mysterious Traveler, The Inner Sanctum, Suspense, and much more. Hear classic radio drama on Monday nights, 11 p.m. until midnight, on the station Making Waves, 89.3.
This is WHFR.FM. We are the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Angela Joyner from Stephenville, Texas. Let's talk about Ricky Sorrells, a guy by the name of Ricky Sorrells. He was also a witness to this craft, wasn't he?
And he... Yes, he was. Now, I don't know if it's the same craft. Ricky is the only one that had a daytime sighting.
This was during the day.
He actually witnessed a daytime sighting before Steve Allen called me.
Okay.
I believe that Ricky's sighting was near the middle of December.
Okay.
But he went to work and told his friends about it. Man, y'all aren't going to believe what I saw. He has a very woodsy property just outside of Dublin, and he was deer hunting and walked right under some kind of craft. And he said it was about 300 feet above his head. He's looking at it up through the trees, and it had these cone-shaped indentions. He did not know it, you know, how large it was, simply because he couldn't see it because of the treetops. He couldn't see the ends or the dimensions or anything. But he is a machinist, and he said one of the things that really stood out to him was that it had no seams or rivets or bolts of any kind, and it was sort of a barn metal gray tin color. And he said when it moved, there was no air displacement, and it was totally silent.
So this was just above the treetop level for him.
Right. He said about 300 feet above his head. When he was a kid in high school, he used to work for a feed mill. And the grain elevator, something about that, I can't remember, was something about 100-foot increments in that grain elevator. And so he said he's always judged things by that. And that's how he judged the, you know, how high it was above his head.
Okay, yeah.
And it also took off at an angle. I don't know how to tell you this over the phone because you can't see my hands.
you talk with your hands like my grandmother, huh?
Yeah. So
you held her
at a 40-degree angle, but remained flat. It did not tilt at a 40-degree angle.
Uh-huh.
So he went to work, told his friends about it. Of course, they're going, "Yeah, right. What were you doing that day? You know, you probably shouldn't have had a gun in your hand." You know, they're really ribboning, giving him what for. And then when they see the UFO headline in the local newspaper, Rick said, "Here they come." They all had a copy of the newspaper. He said, "Look at this, Rick." And they felt bad for ribboning because they knew that, well, God, he really must have seen something.
Well, now I'd heard that this Ricky Sorrells had been harassed. Now, is this the type of harassment we're talking about? It was before the February 08 incident? He was harassed because this wasn't...
Well, the sighting was January 08. That's when I learned of.
Oh, okay.
January.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And it was after that, yes, it was after that, that he felt he was being harassed. He was having helicopters fly so low over his property that they were running his cattle. You know, most people around here have a regular job, but they also have things they do on the side for, you know, for a second income.
Right.
And, Ricky has a few head of cattle. He doesn't have, like, a ranch or anything. It's just a small place. But, you know, the last thing you want is something running your cattle through a barbed wire fence, you know?
Yeah, really? Now,
and,
how did he describe these helicopters?
The thing about the helicopters were he couldn't see any kind of markings on them. He said they have never flown so low before. Now, one night, it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. Now, he normally gets up to go to work at 2:30 in the morning. These helicopters were keeping him awake, so he got up to go outside, see what was going on. And another big thing around here is we have lots of coyotes. And so he has a a spotlight on his pickup to coyote hunt because you don't want the coyote getting your cattle either.
Right.
So he said he could hear them. He went out to his pickup, turned on that spotlight, positioned it upwards, and the pilot was so low, he could see the pilot throw his arm up to protect his eyes from the light. Well, that's pretty low.
Yeah, probably thought he was going to get shot at, too.
Mm-hmm.
You may have.
It's just been incredible. He also got a call from somebody that claimed to be a major in the Air Force that was telling him to quit talking about the sightings, that he was on his way to his property. Ricky was saying, look, I've done all the interviews I'm going to do. You know, it was like 8:30 at night or something. And the man was real insistent and to the point that, Rick thought, well, God, is he already here? Is he coming across the cattle guard? He moved to the window to see if he could see any headlights and said, look, don't cross my cattle guard. And said, I have guns here and I don't appreciate this. And he was told, look, we have more firepower than you. And he said, to quit talking about the sighting.
Okay.
And then he said, I'll quit talking about it if you'll quit flying these helicopters so low. The helicopters stopped after that. The jets did not. So
they still had jets going over his home?
Yeah, but not as low, not like the helicopters were, but lower than he felt like was normal.
Yeah. Yeah,
and,
the more use, the more.
He had another man come on his property in the middle of the night, and he had quite a few things go on. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, the more you study the UFO phenomenon and the results from the witnesses, you'll find there's a common thread, and that's the unmarked helicopters that harass the witnesses. It's the phone calls. It's another common thread is people see these UFOs up close and personal. Notice that there's no seams, no rivets. It doesn't seem like they can't figure out how they're put
exactly
together.
My feeling is the reason he got those phone calls and the harassing helicopters might be, and I'm no expert, but he's the only one that reported a daytime sighting.
Okay.
He had more detail than anyone else.
Yeah. The nighttime sightings, the James McGahas of the world can say, oh, that was the planet Venus. That was just a shooting star, this, that, and the other. But the daytime sightings, you can't just wash away like that. You can't just explain them away.
He had more detail than anyone else. As soon as Angela Brown interviewed him, he was on every news channel. I mean, just almost immediately.
The Sorrels?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he got a lot of attention just from that one AP report.
Yeah.
And he really didn't do any interviews for a long time until he came to me. And he didn't come to me so that I could do a story. He came to warn me. He felt like that I might not be safe. He didn't feel safe. He didn't feel like his family was safe.
Have you been harassed at all? Do you feel you've been harassed? Nobody's
I have not been harassed. And that's one thing that I told him at the time. He said, you're the one writing about these. This is what I'm experiencing. I don't want you to do a story about it, he said.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't do the stories for, at least 2 weeks. It was about 2 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
I said, look, Rick, they're not going to bother me because they know I'm going to write about it.
Mm-hmm,
I said, the more public you are, I think the less that they will bother you.
Yeah.
Because, you're going to start having people look up in the sky a lot or people driving by your place the more public you are, I think the better off you are.
Mm-hmm.
And after about 2 weeks, instead of being insecure and frightened about what was happening, he got mad.
Uh-huh.
And that's when he decided to let me write the two stories.
And was he harassed after that, after the stories came out?
No, I would say that had that started to all kind of die off. He had a few more helicopter buzzes and that sort of thing.
Mm.
And he has seen it, I believe, three times since sighting.
Has he? Has he gotten any pictures? Any pictures? Is there any photographic evidence?
He has a picture off of his digital camera, but it's so small you can't tell anything about it. And then when you blow it up, it's so pixelated you can't tell anything about it.
Right. Are there any good...
I mean, it's not a very good camera on his cell phone.
Are there any good... Okay, there was
The constable?
The constable that took the picture with his camcorder and... use a radar gun to time the
speed. Okay, that's Officer X.
Officer X.
He did not go on the record with his name simply because he's the only one that talked to me, but there were three local law enforcement people that saw a craft on January the 8th.
Who's Mike Zimmerman?
Do what?
Who's Mike Zimmerman?
Mike Zimmerman works at Tarleton State University on their police force. He is a former protector of governors, Texas governors. He protected five Texas governors.
Bodyguard for them, yeah.
But Officer X got together with these other two officers, and they actually compiled and compared... and did a CAD drawing, and you can see that on my website. It's www.stephenvillelights.com. You can also read his account. This thing that they saw had strobing lights, and when it strobed, you know, it would light the whole thing up, and that's how they were able to get the outline of the actual craft.
Okay. Now... I was talking about when you mentioned lights here. History Channel's UFO Hunters with Ken Cherry from Texas MUFON were out there investigating, and they did a thing on UFO Hunters, and there was a woman, I don't know if you know about this, but there was a woman who claimed and showed the pictures, a video actually, of a light coming down from the sky but was truncated, never hit the ground. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, that's Margie Galvez. She lives in Brownwood, which is about 60 miles southwest here.
And what do you know about her? I mean, is she credible?
I have had two very reputable people. One is a climate scientist that is interested in the whole UFO phenomenon, and he has viewed that tape, and he said, there's another part in there about this deer disappearing.
Right.
He said that's a glitch in the tape. Now, I don't think that Ms. Galvez intentionally set up anything.
The deer disappearing?
I don't know about the light that doesn't go all the way to the ground.
Mm.
You know, he said there's no way to prove that that's not moonlight reflecting off of something. I'm not sure. So okay. I think, you know, what she has, she believes is legitimate.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure it's been proven exactly that there was a glitch there where the deer disappeared. And, you know, they could be still studying the line. I'm not sure.
Well, from what I saw, it looked like there were deer in front of the camera, and then all of a sudden they perked up and ran away, and then the light came down. They didn't, vanish.
Deer are easily spooked. I don't know what you know about them, but they're easily spooked.
Well, sure. Well, if you had some kind of crap sitting over your head, I'd be spooked, too.
I don't know if that happened. I don't believe it happened at the same time.
Okay.
I think the light came down later, just like it looked like when that deer stepped into where the light had been, it disappeared. Well, those were actually tapes that were like 3 weeks apart or something.
Oh, my.
So that gets kind of complicated, and, you know, none of us are really experts at looking at.
Right. Now, if there's a misrepresentation or a misunderstanding or any kind of hoax or anything, we want to know about it too as investigators. We want to know so
well,
we can.
I definitely don't think she was hoaxing.
No, it was just misunderstanding.
You know, a glitch in it's a wildlife camera on a deer feeder.
Right.
What it is,
right.
And it runs continuously.
Okay.
And she, you know, I think she probably just didn't realize that was a glitch in her camera there
okay.
at that time.
Okay. Your website, of course, is, say it again, Stephenville?
It's www.stephenvillelights.com.
Stephenville Lights.
And if anybody wants to ask me any questions, they can email me there.
Mm.
I try to answer, I do answer all of the emails personally.
Okay. Well, we're not going to end this. You still got a few minutes?
Sure.
Because I've got to take a break right now, but I do want to come back to you and wrap this up. But I won't need to take a break now and remind our listeners, you're listening to WHFR.FM. We are the only station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with Stephenville, Texas journalist, a reporter, Angela Joyner, covering the Stephenville UFO sighting cases. We will be right back after this. Stay tuned.
This is the sound of a bully at school.
Where'd you get the shirt? Colorblind and things?
And this is the sound of a kid telling her parents about the bully. If you don't hear about it from your kid, that doesn't mean it's not happening.
McGruff the Crime Dog here about how parents can tell if bullying is upsetting their children. Kids may avoid school. Grades may suffer. Stop bullies with words to your kids, school officials, or other concerned parents, and at McGruff.org.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Corn in the field, listen to the rice when the wind blows across the water. King Harvest has surely come.
That's right. King Harvest has surely come. Right here to WHFR Dearborn. The only station making waves. Come join me, your host, King Harvest, for my new show, Sunday evening, 6 to 8 p.m. We'll be bringing in the sheaves, a bumper crop with the best modern indie musicians mixed with distinguished past masters. Remember, that's King Harvest, 6 to 8 Sundays on WHFR, the only station making waves.
Performing arts are an important facet of life. There is no substitute for the relationship between audience and performer. Your contributions to the Henry Ford Community College Theater Program enable students and faculty to continue promoting HFCC's artistic standards. By becoming a member of the Friends of HFCC Theater, you are allowing the theater program to prosper through establishing a scholarship fund, improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a friend of HFCC Theater, call 313-845-6478.
WHFR.FM, making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with Angela Joyner. And, Angela, right after you did this story for the Empire Tribune, you all of a sudden were not with the Empire Tribune. Can you tell us under what circumstances you left that newspaper?
I'll try.
Okay.
That was a really hard day for me, but because I loved my job at the newspaper, I love writing. I really felt like I was doing what I was meant to do, but as time went on, a story of this magnitude actually drains a small newspaper.
Hmm.
I was getting so many phone calls and so many emails from all over the world. Other people were really having to help me with my work, which took away from, you know, their time for their job. It reached a point, you know, we thought it was going to die down. Then the military comes out with a press release saying, oh, we made a mistake about the F-16. So that brought it all back up again. I think the editor and the publisher just, they wanted me to go on. They didn't want me to do any more UFO stories. I was told to ignore the people that called and to ignore the emails. Well, I really didn't know how to do that. I was raised where ignoring is wrong, and here these witnesses were, like, being inundated with interviews, too. I didn't want to abandon those people. They trusted me with their stories.
Right.
And I didn't feel that would be right. So I was really in a quandary, you know. They wanted me to let it all go, but yet I was still the witness contact, the media contact. They didn't give me a way to do that. So I started forwarding emails and things to my home computer, and I just started trying to deal with it on my own time rather than newspaper time. There was some conflict there, you know, probably with the editor in the beginning anyway, because she wasn't that crazy about a UFO story, even though, you know, later she said it was the right thing to do. When she first saw the UFO in the headline, you know, she told everybody that she cried. She was so upset. And she felt it made us look like a tabloid. So there was some conflict early on, even that first day when the news truck started rolling in. She told me it was 10:30 in the morning. She said, cut this off. We got to get the newspaper out for tomorrow. No more interviews. The publisher came out and said, what are you doing? You can't turn down these interviews. So it was a back and forth thing. I was very in the middle. And finally, I ended up just giving my notice. And I just felt it was the best decision I could make at the time. It was really a catch-22. Like,
but this was your decision, and not you weren't pressured by them?
Well, I wasn't pressured. They didn't say, hand in your notice.
Right.
But they didn't give me a way to deal with everything I was having to deal with.
Okay.
And so a week into that notice, I came in, my computer was gone, my Rolodex was gone. You know, I was told just hand in my keys, and they were real disappointed in me and just all of this stuff.
Oh, wow.
And then I found out that they thought I was looking for another job on their time, which the only thing I did was, you know, I'm a former teacher, so I had emailed an administrator at the school. I always covered the school events, and to see what I needed to do to update my file over there to see if I could substitute teach for the rest of the year, because I'm thinking, how am I going to pay my bills?
Right.
And then Jeff Wiese with the Dallas Morning News, that day I was supposed to meet him for lunch. He wanted to do a follow-up story on the impact of the sighting for Stephenville. Well, I believe they had heard that that was a job interview for me. I said, no, it's not a job interview. I can't move to Dallas. I've got a 17-year-old daughter who's got to finish high school here, you know. I don't know what they were thinking, but that part was really ugly. I was devastated. I was in tears. They gave me a cardboard box, said, go pack your stuff and get out.
Well, it, you know, I will believe it sounds like it was your decision. At the same time, it sounds like if you had stuck around a little bit longer, they probably would have just let you go. And all over this UFO story, am I right?
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I say, I admire people who will stick to their guns, even if it costs them their jobs. You know, look at George Knapp in Las Vegas.
Right.
You know about him.
Yeah.
He came out with all this story from Area 51 and all of this stuff about UFOs. And he was a skeptic at first, too, but he thought, well, that'd be a good sales pitch, a good story, and it'll sell, you know. And
right.
That's what it's all about. Come on, you know, selling papers, selling TV time. And
exactly.
And the more he investigated it, the more he found out that there's got to be something to it. In fact, you were the speaker at the Paradigm Research Group's X conference recently. Was it April?
That's right.
Yeah. And you met astronaut Edgar Mitchell.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. How'd that go?
Very nice man. And I was just taken aback with everybody I met at that conference.
Mm-hmm.
It gets to the point, you look around at those conferences, you know, there's 300, 400, 500 people there, whatever it was.
Right.
And you go, okay, there's doctor in front of all these names. And you go, could this many very smart people be that far out in left field?
Mm. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you listen to the skeptics talk, and, well, the only people that go to those meetings are silly, goofy people who live in the sticks, and they, you know.
That's
don't
not
have,
true.
Yeah, of
That's
course
not. True
not.
At all.
Look at MUFON. MUFON is filled with PhDs and highly educated people.
Met some of the most intelligent, mm-hmm. some of the most educated people I've ever met in my life at mm-hmm. these things. And you just look at Dr. Lynn Kitai for Phoenix Flight. She's an mm-hmm. MD.
Right.
She's not a stupid person.
Mm-mm.
And she's definitely not from the sticks. So the people that say that need to go to these things, and they need to meet some
well,
of these people.
Well, they don't.
Now, you know, not everybody's like that. You know, you get your average citizens, and then you do get some people that are kind of out there.
And they're kind of out there, yeah, kind of spacey, so to speak, no pun intended. But... Someone else did come up to you, a naval officer, is that correct?
Identified himself as Navy, and he showed me some sort of ID mm-hmm. after my presentation that in the upper right-hand corner, in bold, it was Navy. I didn't see it for just a second.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been kind of hanging back. Of course, after you do a presentation, then you just... You know, you say your thank yous and everything, and when you start to come down from the podium, then you have all these people coming up wanting to ask you this or that.
Right.
Well, after all of those people cleared out is when he stepped up. And, yes, he did tell me that that was his assignment for the weekend. I go, well, if they don't believe in this, then why would you be here? He said, I'm here to keep a check on the public and how the public feels about it. And I said, could I have your card? And he kind of... smiled and looked at me. I said, I guess you can't do that. And he said, well, I'd rather not. And anyway, he said he would be there all weekend. I kept looking for him after that. I never saw him again.
Hmm.
I did contact Steve Bassett, and he said no one had registered with him like that. Very well-dressed man, suit and tie.
Hmm.
He had a briefcase he was holding down by his side in his right hand.
Hmm.
You know, whether he was... genuine? I don't know.
Yeah, this happens at MUFON Symposium also. Someone from, I don't know, government, black ops, CIA, NSA, who knows where they're from, but someone in the know, someone who doesn't know it all but knows more than the ufologists do, will show up. They don't want to learn from us. They want to know how much we know.
That's what I think, too.
They want to know how much we know.
That's what they're thinking.
But,
and,
go ahead.
You know, I asked him, I said, why, you know, if you're here, then why aren't we getting disclosure? What is going on there? He said, you touched on that in your presentation. I said, well, what was that? He said, when you talked about your witnesses and how their belief systems were shaken.
Hmm.
I said, oh, okay. I don't know if somebody that was really with DOD, Navy, or whatever would actually come up and speak to me. I mean, I can't imagine that they would do that. I mean, what do they have to gain? Really nothing.
It seems a little odd, but at the same time, why would he? You know, why why would he introduce himself that way?
Yeah, why would he? I don't understand why he would have done that. Now, he could be somebody that's really in that and just interested in the whole phenomenon.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of those, too.
Sometimes I wonder if they know any more than we do.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. That's the thing. They know. It's so compartmentalized. In other words, this certain departments know certain aspects, but don't they can't tell other these aspects to other departments who know other aspects, and there's only a handful of them that have the whole picture, whatever amount of picture, you know, it's not a complete puzzle, but whatever puzzle we do have, there's only
right.
a handful of them that know
and
that.
And I thought about that, too, because he could have been assigned to get the public pulse, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and not know anything, but then because he's assigned, thinking, well, there's got to be something going on with this.
Well, back in
maybe that piques his interest. Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, we could speculate all day. Who knows? Yeah.
Back in the 60s, the Brookings Institute, the government hired the Brookings Institute to find out, to do a survey or a study on how the world, how the public would accept the fact that we're not alone in the universe and that mm-hmm. they're visiting us. And are you familiar with the Brookings Institute study?
Not really, no.
And they came out with, history has shown that civilizations have changed dramatically when a higher, more advanced civilization visits a more primitive civilization. That civilization is doomed to change. Well, they made the decision right then and there that they can't tell us about this because status quo. We can't change the
right.
status quo. What if these aliens do not use money? Oh, my God. You know?
Right.
Well, we can't have that.
Yeah, what if it eliminates, what if their technology eliminates the need for oil?
That's right. In fact,
you know,
you listen to the Disclosure Project, and they have witnesses that come forward that say, I've been in this UFO business for years, and I was part of the cover-up, and I'm telling you, we have devices that will eliminate the use for oil, power our homes, power our cars, free non-polluting devices
uh-huh.
of energy.
And we are destroying our world. I don't know,
yeah.
you know, is that what they're watching for, you know, to keep us from doing that? I interviewed at the ExCon a man named Robert Emmenegger, and mm-hmm. The interview's on my website, mm-hmm. but he just has an incredible story. His book is back in the 70s. He wrote it and did a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
For the government, received all kinds of cooperation, and was told of an alien craft landing at Holloman Air Force Base.
Yes.
And he has an incredible story, mm-hmm. and I really believe this man.
Mm-hmm.
He worked with Nixon on his reelection campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, you know, for the Reagan administration called him to the White House to, you know, talk to him about none other, you know, UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going, then there has to be something, you know. It's just, there has to be.
Yeah.
He thought he was going to get to use the tape the Air Force took of the landing at Holloman. And at the last minute, Colonel Coleman of the Pentagon says, oh, well, Watergate just happened. We think the public's not ready for this. We've decided you can't use it. Allow him to use animation and gave him all of the details.
I'll be darned.
So you should go, if you haven't read that, you should go on the site and read my interview with him and try to get it. You can get a copy of his book.
And once again,
UFOs, past, present, and future.
And once again, your website is Stephenville?
Yes,
Stephenville
it's StephenvilleLights.com.
StephenvilleLights.com.
Uh-huh.
Very good. Angela, I really appreciate you joining us this evening. We're running a little low on time here, but thank you so much for sharing this with us.
And well, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it. David, uh-huh. you are such a great host.
Well, thank you. Thank you, and you've been a great guest. I hope we can do this again sometime.
That would be great.
That'd be great. And if you, you've got my contact information, and if you get any more witnesses or anything that comes in about Stephenville Lights, put it on StephenvilleLights.com or give me a call, and I'll put it out to my people, or I'll to my listeners, or I'll get back with you, and you can put it out to the listeners. How's that
I
sound?
I sure will. Oh. That sounds really good.
Okay. Thanks again, and take care of yourself.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can write to me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And please visit my website at ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now being archived at the at whfr.fm's website. Click on Archives of the Weekly WHFR Forum. And stay tuned to WHFR for the best in alternative music. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us the first Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
You're listening to 89.3 WHFR Dearborn. We're bringing you non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College. Good morning. My name is Bill Keith. It's a pleasure to be here with you on what looks like it's going to be a beautiful Saturday, perfect for homecoming, which is taking place here in Dearborn, and WHFR.fm. We're all out there. So look for the WHFR tent. Stop by and say hello to all of us that are out there throughout the day today and tomorrow, and look maybe through our CDs, Purge CDs, which you can kind of peruse through and pick up some WHFR promotional items. And most importantly, just let us know that you listen to the radio station and you really enjoy this station. I thought I'd get things started with some music from Donna the Buffalo. New album